Welcome to the Memory Core, where two old grogs going on their 40s complain about Battletech and miniatures.
Yeah, hell yeah. Been a while, huh? I mean, obviously, besides, AI face manipulation things of Battletech
It was
characters.
genius. It was genius. You know what? Here's what I'm ashamed about, though. This is one I would love to coin and get out there. Too bad they don't have bird as the word, and we could figure out a way to get one of the Titate to freaking sing it. That would have been great.
Well, hold on. I mean, one of the problems with the Wombo thing is that it's you can't just pop any song in there. So clearly, there's some licensing stuff that they're doing to take advantage of the AI manipulating the face and the drawing of it. But they're also doing a lot of animation, and so they clearly have this idea of having like almost a skeleton, and they take the image and they wrap it around a skeleton and a mesh. So who knows? I mean, they release new songs every couple days,
It
so
might happen.
it might happen. Or at least Nikolai Malthus doing the bird is the word.
That would actually be pretty fun.
Much better than the Nikolai Malthus backstory we got in Battletech
Yeah.
Legends.
Nikolai Malthus in Night Court Edition.
It's so fucking
How
dumb.
stupid was that? I don't care. I'll go on a record saying that was really freaking stupid. And then making the mistake of putting Adam Steiner in the one end, even if it was or was intentional, that's still pretty freaking bad.
There's so since we've last talked, and we're doing this, what is August 22nd that this is being
Yeah,
recorded?
it's been a long time.
So we got Ilklan that came out, and after Hour of the Wolf and a lot of the stuff that we got in between, it I don't know, it definitely feels my love of Battletech is taking a hit. Is
Yeah.
do I want to keep investing all my mind space into this franchise? I mean, I've been doing it for so long because I love it. It just obviously a lot of you are here that are listening to this are probably in the same boat. Something about Battletech clawed its way into you and doesn't want to leave, even though we become adults, we've got other things going on, other interests, other hobbies, other responsibilities. But yet something about this game or this IP keeps pulling you back in.
Just when I thought it was out,
Yeah.
they pulled me back in.
And then, God damn it, the past couple of stuff that's come out has been, I know it has a polish. Well, I don't even say it has a polish because the typos are so
Well,
bad, but a lot of stuff's just been like a real, like an injury,
yeah,
right?
this almost brings us into the first part of this episode. We wanted to maybe get into art briefly. Because the and when we say the artwork in Ilklan is bad, we're not saying all of it was bad. Obviously, they rehashed a lot of the old stuff that was good.
Total props to Travis of Renegade HPG, who has done a lot of this work discussing this and who has managed to enunciate what we are feeling that's been difficult to describe. But he's done a really good job with that. And boy, Ilklan just hammered it home that the current art direction is just not what I'm wanting to see. And not just like the redesigns of the mechs. That's a whole other topic. And there are pros and cons to that. I mean, obviously one of the pros is that it's clearly attracting new players, which is good, which is good. Although it's kind of funny that some of the people will talk about how, MechWarrior Online, those designs are what pulled them into the game. Well, guess what, man? That's your nostalgia, just like I got my nostalgia. Oh, to hear it put like that. But no, I mean, I get it. Like, if that's what you want, and that's the style you're looking for, and that's what pulls you into the game, okay, cool. I got a whole pile of shame of unpainted miniatures.
Where are my MechWarrior 2 models? Who's gonna 3D print those? Come on, man. They already have elementals and battle armor in there. Some aerospace fighters.
The real classics, right? But yeah, so I've got my pile of shame and stuff that I haven't painted, and that's fine. I don't need any new mechs. Like, it's not going to change what I've got. But what I think what really sticks out is the art direction in terms of what does art in a Battletech book look like. And Ilklan definitely was like,
Oof. Yeah, that brings us back full circle to it. I forget the artist who did it, but the one with the what is it, Tribana? Yeah, however you say it.
Yeah,
is running. What is he? It's running or charging a.
It's a fratricide tank, the carnivore tank, right?
Yes, the mech is the Tribana. Yeah. I'm not too experienced with the Dark Age era stuff. Yeah. But that was a really good picture. I think that was the definite high point of that book.
Yeah,
that picture alone.
Yeah.
The cover itself was fine, but it wasn't really showing the same message the old cover was.
Right.
You know, it didn't feel like there was any of that tension.
Yeah. Yeah. The original cover obviously referenced what was the original story to Ben Rome's pitch that had to change.
It was better.
Yeah. And that's going to be a whole other episode. That's a whole long, list of theories and what it means to be a writer.
It will be in our future Hour of the Wolf slash Ill Clan episode.
Now has to be both of those because they're basically the same book. There's like no differences basically between the two books. The Ill Clan makes it look as though Republic put up more of a fight, but in the end it was, there wasn't really any true new information besides like an accounting of units that weren't completely destroyed. It didn't change.
Or some new thing he blurred out in the book that they have to cover for.
Yeah. Yeah. the art, a lot of the artwork in Ill Clan, which I think is, it's one thing to see reused art in, say, the rule books, because Battletech's always done that between the original Total Warfare, like the way back in the day, and then the Compendia, the first and second ones, and then the Master Rules and all stuff. Them reusing art in those books, whatever, but
it's theirs. Why not?
Yeah, but to see what's supposed to be the pinnacle book of 35 years of storytelling, well, 37 by the time it came out.
Yeah, and all we get are layers and motion blur.
Layers and motion blur and a lot of reused art, and even the new art felt incredibly flat. It was
the art in the TRO, the TRO section of the book was like really flat.
Yeah, I don't know why they chose to do it that way. But again, none of those were new. Those mechs were already out and included in the recognition guides.
Yeah. So, and I understand putting them in there from the perspective of a new fan picking up the book, and it kind of gives them a glimpse into like how scenario building works and all of that, which I think that all of that was fine in there.
I just don't know what new fan would want to pick up that book.
True.
I don't know.
But I see it as a perspective of somebody like their MechWarrior Online comment, they just kind of see it and they're like, oh, that looks familiar, That looks kind of like that Timberwolf from there.
Yeah. My cats are hanging out. We're recording at my place today, so my cats are going to be all out and about causing trouble.
Hey, buddy.
I think one of the things that Battletech probably needs is a source book that is friendly for beginners, kind of how we had an Innersphere source book and then Clan source book that was like a big overview. When did those come out? Like late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah, you're talking about the original field manuals?
No, not the field manuals. They put out, there were two books, and they were basically like straight up source books that basically give concise histories of the Innersphere and the clans.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember what was on.
That was with the, when they were doing like field manual Crusader clans.
They were doing it kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
And those rules were great for people that wanted to get in and wanted to see what was going on. But we don't have something like that now.
I think those were like the last days of FASA leading in the Fan Pro.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah. Ill Clan, it's one of those things. I remember seeing a comment on Reddit. Like, well, at least Catalyst can afford to pay for good artists now. Which one is just, you think, that's no.
These people don't know about Jim Holloway.
Well, right. And what
the word competence really means.
Well, when Joel Bisk, the interview on Renegade HPG, saying that Catalyst doesn't pay the artists until 6 months after publication. Like, what? And if the book gets delayed, maybe it's 8 months after you submit that artwork. Maybe it's 9 months. You look at the artwork, right? It's just reusing a lot of art. And then the new art, the big splash pages. I mean, I don't want to shit on anybody because they can draw better than I can, but man, this stuff felt so flat and so lifeless, and it's ironic because it's colored, but if it had been pencils, it'd be much more dynamic. And the other thing too is that a lot of this stuff is clearly just 3D models that are positioned in place in environments.
Yeah.
And then they're just cel shaded. I mean, seeing loads and loads of artwork of just mechs standing on an alpha channel background, that was pretty lame.
Like, yeah,
just pages and pages of that. I mean, I just, yeah, I mean, it's not what you'd see elsewhere. And, you know, we could always go through and make note of reused art. I mean, I remember there was one, it was an awesome picture of a Highlander. I think it was in the Operation Klondike book. And then it had a Clan Blood Spirit emblem on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then it showed up somewhere else and very poorly corrected in like MS Paint was a grayed out patch where that Blood Spirit symbol would have been to make it seem like it was less specific to the clans. And it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's
a quick rant.
That's a quick rant. Cause that's a whole thing that could go on forever. And I know we talked about kind of going through some of the original source books and finding like art that really, we really enjoyed that really spoke to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go through the original house books, cause people will talk about bad art and they'll show the relatively simple penciled and inked drawings from the original source books.
They'll show the old narrow helmet, that famous one that they put like concern under. They always refer to that for narrow helmets.
Yeah,
instead of like that nice Wolf's, was it the Wolf's Dragoons one?
Yeah,
that picture, that blue one that looks really good.
Yeah, they'll reference, they'll cherry pick some of the worst examples, but then they'll skip over the Holloway stuff, the Bradstreet stuff, the Laubenstein stuff. Like there's lots of really amazing examples of really intense art that evokes mood and setting and all that stuff about the art telling you a bigger story is missing in this new stuff. Sorry, Carrots, my cat Carrots is just all over my phone. He's getting all this attention from Dan.
Yeah.
So you're gonna hear a lot of clicking of nails on the table as he's doing this because he's an asshole and I can't cut his nails without drugs.
We're professionals here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you know, Wave 2's coming. I'm going to do another unboxing video for that.
Mm.
That'd be really fun.
I don't remember what I'm getting in Wave 2. Maybe I'm getting some maps or something, but...
Yeah, I'm excited, which will get us into our second part of the conversation about a little bit about the miniatures. This is all leading into something big.
Yeah, too. And I don't want to keep harping on the miniatures because they're definitely some that I like, and I can't just like blanket statement knock them. There are things that I don't like that are maybe too... spread out from mm-hmm. what, or too derived or far away from what's going on. And again, you know, Travis at Renegade HPG has gone over this stuff and sort of the relatively staticness of the new mechs, you know, that you're not getting a lot of the impression of the dynamism that they may be able to achieve.
It's like we're doing a quick love letter to the guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I haven't watched
all his podcasts have been on point lately.
Yeah, I haven't watched all of his videos, but he has been very good at really kind of nailing what I'm feeling as well, albeit with less cursing.
Yeah. But what I wanted to bring up with the miniatures is when I originally backed it, it was because, and I've said this in previous videos to those who just like listen to this episode, it'd probably be the only one if you're mad. They did the rehash of the originals, you know, the Unseen, and I thought that was good. I didn't have a lot of those or any really.
Yeah, yeah.
So that worked out for me. But when I originally backed all of this, I knew we were going to get more of those, but I didn't know it was just going to be one-off sculpts for all of them. Mm-hmm. So to say, like when I see what Blaine is doing with the Black Knight right now is what I expected these to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a the game itself seems like it wants to move towards more of the miniature market, you know, which obviously Iron Wind has been doing forever and doing a great job with, like those 30-50 reprints, but that's what I thought we were getting with all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like I could buy like the Assassin I reposed, I could buy it already with the limbs and different pieces.
Yeah.
And even if it was on plastic, you know, even with like a pin vise, whatever I need to do, it'll be easier to post, so I don't have to actually like cut up pewter, which can be hard at times depending on how thick it is.
And I mean, and I know there are people out there that are immediately wanting to run to the comments and criticize Iron Wind, and that's a whole other episode that would be discussed. I mean, part of it is I don't know who funds new sculpts. You know, I don't know who puts forth the money for Iron Wind to make a new sculpt.
Yeah.
I have fan-funded a number of new sculpts, and I'm hoping that there are two of them that I fan-funded individually by myself. I don't want to say anything, but they're not Max. But I don't know if, you know, having fan-funded them, if that speaks to what Iron Wind does. Like, does Catalyst, and before them FanPro, and then before them Fossa, do they approach Iron Wind and say, we want you to make this many new sculpts, you know, what's it going to take to do this, and then we will fund you the money so that we can get the sculpts, and then maybe there's some sort of like licensing deal or something.
Yeah.
You know, people knock on Iron Wind, but they don't understand that Iron Wind, if you buy a metal miniature that's not made by Reaper, it's probably was made at Iron Wind. So for example, Dark Sword miniatures that produce all these really, really fantastic, gorgeous fantasy models, whether it's their line of anthropomorphic creatures. So for example, if you ever wanted a wizard cat, they've got it. You know, if you, their Game of Thrones line, you know, all the stuff that Dark Sword does, granted they're their own company and they probably own the masters then and they've got their stable of artists, but those miniatures are made in Iron Wind. If you've bought, I believe if you bought a copy of Monopoly, guess where that little schnauzer and top hat came from? Iron Wind.
Iron Wind.
You know, so the problem is not Iron Wind. The problem is if you don't like these old sculpts, I mean, the question is, I would like to know, and maybe we could never know, who is actually financially responsible for new sculpts?
Yeah, it's like, what are you actually mad at? You know, like the fact that you can't afford to get new sculpts made? Or, and I'm doing quotation fingers right here, low quality pewter miniatures.
Yeah.
Or whatever the complaint is going on about them right now.
You know, and granted, I mean, this lead-free pewter is more difficult to clean up and manipulate than old school lead.
But it's not bad.
I mean, old school lead was great. And that's a whole other episode on like how to handle that safely. But yeah, I mean, the old lead miniatures, I mean, those are great. Clean up the mold lines is a breeze.
Got a real nice Craftsman. It almost looks like a pocket knife, but it has replaceable razors you put on the end. You go over to mold line like you're peeling a potato.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so easy. It's not like pewter is like the super hard metal that you can't do anything with. It's just a lot harder to work with than lead. But like real fine, even like sandpaper, you know.
Yeah.
Like that's fine to remove mold lines, or you know, roughen it up a bit so your glue will work better.
Yeah.
And dear Lord, whoever doesn't want to use a pin vise, like seriously, grow up.
Well,
it's so easy to use.
It is. I mean, definitely. Like I understand it. It's another step. You know, but it's not expensive. I mean, pin vises are like $15 to get a decent one.
You can use staples to pin.
You can use staples. You can use paper clips. We probably all have a set of wire nippers.
Yeah.
You know, we just have them, or your parents have them, just because it's something you get when you have a house. You know, it's not difficult. And to be honest, I mean, for the most part,
you can use nail clippers to cut staples.
Yeah. A lot of my miniatures don't have any issues with sticking them. Most of them I haven't needed to pin. I mean, a couple of them I do, like the old school Thunderbolt needed to pin. The Cicada I just painted needed to be pinned.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, a lot of them, it's not an issue. But yeah, I think that's one of the things I'd like to find out, because with the fan funding, is it Iron Wind gets the okay to fan fund it, and then we from Catalyst, and then we fan fund it? Because I know for a while there was people were interested in fan funding the Warcrow, and then it turned out, well, no, we're actually already doing that, so we can't fan fund that one. So yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a digression, because we're going to get into other stuff. And really, mainly, one of the things that I want to talk about was, it kind of does feed into the aesthetics, but I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this I don't know, maybe not permanent, but in theory, a fairly sizable exodus of Warhammer 40K players, you know, and what they're going to bring.
It does go hand in hand in what we were talking about with miniatures, because posing is a pretty big thing to that community. Because when you buy a, I don't know how much it's changed, but way back.
It was WYSIWYG. Yeah, really WYSIWYG.
Yeah, but like back when I was in high school, the first army I've gotten was a starter kit for Eldar. Mm. And when you got them, like you would come, they were like in their poses, but like heads and stuff were like separate. Like you can tilt like the head on it and everything, like real subtle things. Yeah. But then like it was more like a stats based game. So like if you wanted them to have grenades or something, like you would glue that to it. Some of them would have that, some of them wouldn't. Yeah. You know, and then your pewter guys would be like your heroes you would put on the table that are already pretty much in poses.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And I know Citadel's moved, or Games Workshop's moved pretty much, I think, entirely to plastics.
Yeah.
But they were still doing a lot of pewter stuff and plastic stuff and mixing and matching things.
And they were, you know, in their defense with this, they were good looking.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's easier to do more dynamic poses when you're representing
what
humanoid things are like, or living things, versus, you know, giant battle mechs.
What I liked about Eldar were their I forgot what their walkers were called. I liked those, and then I liked their speeder bikes that they had. I liked playing those too. But I maybe played that once or twice, and then I realized like how much money it would be to go from the starter set, and I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Games Workshop does things, a lot of things right, does a lot of things not great. You know, like their paints are very easy to get your hands on, but the quality is, it's not bad, but it's not great. I mean, there's an amazing breakdown of different paint brands by Vince Venturella.
You sent me that and I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah, and it's really, it's almost like 2 hours long of him going over different paint brands, like the pros and cons of each. You know, a lot of it has to deal with like pigment density, how matte things dry, can you glaze it, how easy are they to thin, how easy are they to mix. You know, Games Workshop, you know, did a lot of great things. I mean, I still remember some of like the paint pots that I bought, you know, as a kid, and I don't know, like the smell of the actual paint, you know?
Yeah.
And how that like will take you back.
Like, I remember, like, since you bring that up, I remember the old BattleTech paint kits.
Yeah,
I remember
the
smell of that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the Ralph Hartha paints were definitely, they were okay. You could do a lot with them. But I think the guys over at Iron Wind, and before them Ralph Hartha, said, yeah, we just stopped because Reaper was doing the same stuff and doing it better. So they just didn't worry about it.
Which is fair.
Although, like, in the old Ralph Hartha catalogs, I mean, they had, you know, painting tutorials. Like,
you could buy the Axeman with the paint kit.
Yeah, yeah. I think they had a Hunchback with the paint kit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they had support for the cartoon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The good old days.
So, you know, we had this in theory migration of 40K players. And I think it's definitely interesting. So if you're a 40K player and picking this up, and if you've bothered to listen this far.
Yeah, this will be a pretty nice guide. First and foremost, I think this is important to hear, because I do see this come up on Reddit a lot. You do not need miniatures to play BattleTech.
Right.
The only requirement you really have is, if you wanted to get into it, you could go on the Catalyst site and download a scenario on there. The Classic BattleTech site off of the Catalyst site,
yeah.
I believe. There are quick start rules. The only thing you really need is a hex board and standees that you can differentiate like what mech you have.
Yeah.
Because you can easily get record sheets nowadays through like Mega Mech, or like what I would suggest doing anyway is just dropping the money to buy them in whatever era you start.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do look good.
You know, BattleTech was notorious for the idea that you could get by with just anything as a proxy, whether that's a bottle cap, and just notate on the bottle cap what it is and what the
beer front, and pretzels, man,
the front facing arc was. So in many ways it's a bit liberated. You don't have to be so stringent, you know. And with BattleTech, I mean, the idea is that you're going to be I mean, we like to get miniatures because for us, it's part of the immersion, right? I think for a lot of people, it's...
Yeah, it's the luxury of having them, and it, you know, the hobbyist side of all of us to just want to paint something.
But there was nothing that said that you had to buy four Atlas miniatures to field four Atlases, right? You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But it is nice having those miniatures. And if you want to go so far out to mod them because it's part of what you do, I mean, by all means, yeah. But no one's going to be upset if you get a Warhammer and you cut the SRM-6 box off to be the Davian variant.
Yeah.
And then the next day you want to use it to be the standard variant. Like, nobody's going to really care.
Nope. As long as you know what it is.
They're just going to be happy. They're going to be like, oh, cool, you did that. Go you.
Yeah. Like, we're pretty happy to see people mod stuff. I think those are the more interesting ones to see, you know, or... we'll get into it about painting them too. Like the people who try like really cool effects, like someone did a metallic, God, what was it? I think it was a Mad Cat recently.
Yeah. It pissed me off. Cause I just did. Vindicator.
You did.
Vindicator. Son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. I was going to send you that. That's what's funny.
He went full out into the full sky earth, like across every panel. And it looked pretty good. I mean, there's some things that I'd say you could do to improve it. But there were things I could do to improve the Vindicator I did. Because the idea was, what I wanted to do was to match the awesome from the old camo specs.
And you did. You did a really good job.
But yeah, when he did, I was like, God damn it.
Well, hey, maybe he saw that and was like, huh, I'm going to do what this guy did.
Yeah. Well, I was even thinking about doing something along those lines, like every panel. But I was like, that's going to be too much work.
Yeah, but not this dude with time on his hands.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's do it. But yeah, that's you don't need... miniatures to there you go, there's cat butt.
Yeah.
you don't need miniatures to get into this game. The other cool thing is too, a lot of 40k people have terrain pieces that can easily translate into Battletech, whether you want to do classic using miniatures rules or Alpha Strike.
You could
definitely use that. Yeah. You could bring that stuff to the table and everyone would be excited because they get put their coffee mug or whatever they were using as a building on there, you know?
Well, the other big thing,
we're that laid back.
I think the other thing too is that not to freak out about armies. And I know we talked about this before, actually briefly, is people are like, oh, what mechs are good for this and what mechs are good for that? And really, like, don't stress out about it because, I mean, for me, I just kind of paint things how I want to or what strikes me at the time. I'm not worried about, is all this stuff the same unit? Because I'll get bored fast.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't really matter. As long as you know the mech's yours, no one's going to be upset that you've got a Draconis Combine unit and a Capellan Confederation unit on your side. Like they're just painting like that. It doesn't matter. Don't stress out about it, you know, the same way that Warhammer,
which is like my perfect example. If you're really good at painting a certain, like, let's say Necron theme, you know, and you want to do that to Battletech miniatures, go for it.
Well, yeah. And that kind of gets back to, I did a post on the Battletech painting customs. Cause I got tired of seeing everything's
Clan Ghostbear right now.
Yeah. Tired of seeing the same stuff, the same Clan Jade Falcon unit and the same Clan Ghostbear unit. And granted, like, those are cool schemes, but you don't have to do that, and you can do whatever you want. And you know, for the clans, you know, it was in the Jade Falcon source book, it was like in the first couple of pages, and you know what it said is they'll often paint their mechs in like psychedelic designs and colors, and that kind of became Clan Novacat's thing. You know, as we got the different source books in the field manuals, but you know, in general, you can do, you know, whatever you want. Go nuts, get crazy. I saw that one guy. His name is Midwinter Minis on YouTube. He did a unit having bought Culture Hustle's Pinkest Pink, and like that'd be freaking brilliant. Like I would love to be able to paint, and I wasn't actually thinking about doing it with this Highlander here, but painting a Highlander is like Rhonda Snord's Highlander.
Yeah.
Pink is pink. You know, like the neon.
Elvis was here.
Right. Yeah, just like crazy stuff. So yeah, do whatever you want, you know? Although I think it is important to you're going to mess up, right? And you just have to deal with that. And you have to get better at it and you get a better eye for it. But like for the cicada I painted just recently, I wanted to do it as Defenders of Andurian. So I did a little bit of freehanding with like the lining. But rather than doing it white, I more interpreted it as like khaki as the base color, and then the blue and the green lines, and the green and the khaki, the green isn't as saturated a color as it should be, and it has a little bit too much yellow in it. And with a khaki, it almost kind of disappears next to the khaki.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really bummed about it, but I'm also like, I just want to be done with it and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
So I don't want to, you know, buy a new set of paints and then go over it again. But one of the things that's really bothered me with a lot of stuff when it comes to BattleTech, both with MechWarrior Online, the BattleTech PC game, and a lot of the color choices and the unit color compendium. And I know the guys at the unit color compendium, they put a lot of work into that. And it's cool that resource is available for people, but a lot of it does annoy me because there's this really strong move to desaturated colors where everything just sort of disappears into each other. Like the one of them posted like a smoke jaguar scheme, and it was a vulture, and it was a light gray with a banding of dark gray in the middle, dark gray like in quotation marks, and then a yellow band below it. And like, I don't know, from a distance, like you don't even know what's there. It just looks like a mess. Because everything's so desaturated, it all just blends into each other.
Yeah, there's like a million panels too, which doesn't help.
Right. It just, you sort of lose the forest for the trees, right? Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a concern, because you compare it to what the guys, and I kind of get it too, and maybe it's a matter of just us needing to put in more work into our miniatures. And we have some really good painters over on Camo Specs, but I don't see them doing a lot because they're probably all busy with life. But
yeah,
the painters that we have aren't even really close to what the guys over in Europe doing, or like the people that paint busts and the people that do the 40K stuff.
I think it also gives the message too, and I'm not even knocking them because, man, they could paint miles better than me. But they're... the standard for painting in BattleTech is not a very high bar. And I do not mean that in a bad way. What I mean is, like, you could bring poorly painted miniatures to a table and nobody is going to, like, bat an eye.
Well, we're definitely more positive about it. Yeah, we're definitely really, like, yo, if someone, I mean, it's one of those things, like, I mean, some of the stuff at the BattleTech boards.
We're more like an advice-driven community.
Yeah, we're definitely more willing to see stuff and not... like badmouth it. Although
we'll see something and we'll be like, hey, if you want to bring out the panels, try a wash. Yeah, some people, like when I started, I knew nothing about washing. I just dry brushed everything.
Well, yeah, and the funny thing is now, man, is that I think I'm moving away from washes because of the kind of coffee staining appearance you get if you're not very careful with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, gotta be like all or none. You gotta do the whole thing in the wash or none of it in the
wash.
Yeah.
And for me though, like, With dark washes, like the black ones, I don't like that. But with the flesh tone, like if I'm using a yellow, I actually do like that because it makes it look more weathered.
Yeah, the red and the flesh tone wash works.
And it works for me because I'm really, really lazy.
Yeah. Well, like for me, a couple of miniatures I painted, like that barbarian that I did for my other group, you know, that took me probably about a good week to do. You know, I mean, I probably spent about 10 or 12 hours on it, you know.
It's like my wave two guys. I'm going to have an assembly line, you know, and I'm just going to knock it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, as quick as I can. I'm the Camo Specs quick and dirty guy.
Yeah. But I mean, we're definitely more willing to be positive with each other. But I also don't feel as though we push each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, that at times when I've posted something, it does seem like people are more willing to give me constructive criticism because, one, I do put myself out there for it, but it's almost like as though, I mean, I'd like to think that it's good enough that it's starting to attract criticism in a way to help push me to the next step rather than you know, being handled with kid gloves.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is with a lot of the criticism that you've even given to me, or even not even just criticism, but watching what you do and others do, it was because of you. I actually, instead of just making cockpits black, you know, I've went back and I've added color and, you know, I've tried doing the, what is it, jeweling?
Yeah,
that a lot.
Jeweling's not, I know jeweling's for a lot of people. Jeweling is not for me. And in fact, even like for like weapon barrels, you know, I can't imagine it's that smart for your laser weapon to have the lenses like right at the front of the barrel.
Yeah, it just it looks cool. I know
for people it looks cool.
Like I like doing the like I'll paint a color, and maybe what I'll do is I'll just take like a real small brush and I'll put like that little white like crease at
yeah,
the bottom,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or like a little dot, you know, so yeah. It looks a little bit jeweled.
So it's like capturing the light. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember, I don't know if I wasn't the first to do it, but I remember being one of the first to, I can't remember what mech it was, but I posted it and I did more of the sky earth reflection in the cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeing a lot of other people do it after that. I would like to think it was me, but it was probably just convergent evolution.
Yeah,
like
or people, even coincidence. You
yeah.
Know?
But I mean, I remember, and I've seen a lot more of that. And even doing a monotone sky earth reflection, you know, trying to capture that same view, but using just blue or just using green.
Yeah. Saying get good does go a long way.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Context really matters, because you can say, like, even we've been accused when we say get good. It's not like saying we're better than you or anything. It's like practice, you know, yeah. Push yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, you're going to mess up a lot just the way it is.
Oh, dude, I'm horrible.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of the things about Battletech, and then having gotten into some of these other channels, these painting channels, and seeing what they do and what their approaches are and how they get to where they get,
mm-hmm.
and ways to do it faster. Like for a while there, when I would do, you know, highlights and contrasts on a panel, I would try and use a two brush blending method, which as long as your paint is wet, you can get really, really beautiful results. It looks really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what you do is you paint your midtone and then you do your shadow. And you basically have two brushes in your hand. You got one stuck in your mouth and then one in your hand.
Yep.
So you put your paint down and then really fast, and your brushes have to be wet when you do this too. So you got to use a wet palette as well. So you got a wet palette so all your paint stay wet, your brushes stay wet. You're probably ingesting more paint that's going on the miniature because you're always licking your brushes. But then you come in and then you take that wet paint and you feather it out across the panel. And you get this really nice... It's like a glaze effect, but it's a transition, and you're depositing less and less paint the further away you go from where you put that initial
yeah.
layer. And it can look really, really great, and then you do that, and it really sharp. But then what I've seen a lot of other people have been doing is that they've not been so worried about their gradients and their smooth blends, where instead what a lot of them may do is they'll paint their midtone, they'll go in and do their shadows, and then they'll go in and do their highlights. They may use it more of a stippling method where they're brushing these small, sharp strokes in the direction they want the highlight to be the strongest. And then they'll do a glaze over it all of the mid-tone to bring it all back together. Which, having done that, that makes things really easy. But then you kind of have to go back in and just at the very edges, reinforce those highlights and reinforce those shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did not do with the Cicada. I was just like, I did the highlights, I didn't do the shadows, and now I don't have the contrast
anymore.
Yeah,
I've started getting more and more into doing layers of washes, too.
Yeah. But, like we don't really see a lot of that in Battletech. You know, we see a lot of that in the other stuff, the European stuff. And it's a shame that we haven't really pushed ourselves that much. And I think the other thing that really kind of stuck out to me was... Suddenly, we were all using contrast paints from GW, and they're fucking terrible.
Yeah.
They're not good. And, like, most of the painters that do Warhammer, like, why would I do contrast paints? Because I get the same results better, faster.
I like their dueling paints.
Yeah.
Those are really good.
Okay.
I only have one, though. It's the green one that I use for, like, medium laser barrels, and it does give a nice effect. I've even run it as, like, a gloss over some of the old black cockpits I've done, and it looks pretty good because, like, at a distance, if the light's right, you can see like a slight green like glow to it.
Yeah,
that looks really cool. And you can even, like, even before I did that on some of them, I used that white paint kind of like trick, and I don't do like the line, but like you can kind of like do it while it's still wet and like mix it in.
Okay.
And it adds makes it a little more flat too.
Okay.
In some cases.
Huh.
If that makes sense. But yeah, like those paints are really good. And another thing I like too, it's cool to see, I really hope a lot of the 40K players that do come over actually showcase a lot of their painting skills on even some of the older pewter or like lead guys if they get their hands on it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'd be really interested to see how much they make them pop.
Well, right. And it comes down to that contrast thing. Like, mm-hmm. And one of the things to think about too is, you know, when you're painting miniatures, the amount of contrast you need to put in is sort of inversely proportional to the size. You know, the bigger the thing you're trying to represent and the smaller it is, the more contrast you have to put in. And that's something that's really not present in a lot of the Battletech stuff, a lot of Battletech miniatures. And even some of the stuff on Camel Specs, the contrast really isn't there in a lot of the things. And that's a shame, because this is what's going up on Camel Specs should be up there in quality, you know, and should be like the box art. And it's kind of a shame too, you know, with the Lance packs, the decision to do the cutout window so you could see the miniatures versus doing what other manufacturers probably would have done and doing, you know, solid boxes and then showing box art of really highly quality painted, high quality painted miniatures.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because a lot of other, and not just GW, but a lot of other manufacturers probably would have chosen painted miniatures for box art versus other stuff. To see what it could be. Rather than just seeing the gray miniatures.
I actually didn't think of that.
Yeah. And granted, we see some of the box art on the back of the new box set. You flip it over and you see some of the miniatures of what they could look like, at least on the Clan one, which is great. But at the same time, to really showcase, like, this is what our miniatures can look like. Yeah. You might not be able to paint it that way. This is what it could look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things, a big call to, you know, the guys who paint Battletech to really push the contrast, to really emphasize what you're trying to represent here. You know, these are 35, 36 foot tall machines, shrunken down to, you know, 6 millimeter scale. Like, you got to really punch up the contrast.
Yeah, you do. A lot of the painters, like the LGBTQ mechs, see, like when they do rainbows and that, those usually look pretty good too.
Yeah.
There you go about colors, right?
That's right.
Like, just
right.
Something that you probably see as maybe like a one-off mercenary unit or something.
Well, and understanding contrast. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm struggling with trying to incorporate, you know, not throwing a bunch of primary colors in it all at once, but if you're going to have, you know, to mix your desaturating, your saturates, you know, if it's a saturated color as the primary thing covering your miniature, then to include a desaturated color for contrast, or, you know, like your warm highlights and your cold shadows and vice versa, or a desaturated color base, then to put something to track the eye that is high saturation. Like that Smoke Jaguar scheme, like that was begging to have a super bright yellow line on there, but instead they use this desaturated yellow.
I've thought about doing a, like, it'd be cool to do like a dull thing like that, but then maybe find a way to do like a glowing paint or something neon as a wash, so it looks like enhanced imaging panels.
Well, what I would like to do is, since I'm getting into oil washes, and there's some better videos on that than anything we can describe here, but basically using the ability to clean up oils because they take so long to dry, using mineral spirits and like a makeup sponge, to try and do, like, remember that spider from the fourth edition box set, mm-hmm. where the panel lines are red in between the panels, to use an oil wash to achieve that effect.
Yeah, that would look really good. God, some of that fourth edition art looked really good.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to recreate that.
Yeah, I'd like to. I tried doing it when I was a kid and I couldn't do it. I just didn't have the skills. Because you're trying to get this red wash, or trying to paint it red and then paint the panels black and not let the paint spill into the panel lines. Oh,
man, that yellow Jaegermech and that red dragon in there would look really cool.
Yeah.
Or the catapult with the gray with the red highlights, almost like Kellhound colors.
If it was gray with red highlights, it was probably Avalon Hussars. Just to see that to the community, like, if you want to make their miniatures look better, I don't think it's necessarily so much new miniatures. I think it was kind of like painting the cicada. I'm saying this because this was the last one I painted. But like, God, you guys want more details?
I know.
You guys aren't painting the details you have. It's like a kid who wants dessert, right? Or at the grocery store, and you want something. But there's a lot of details, and you just have to learn how to paint them. And I mean, granted, yeah, if you guys are happier with some of the newer stuff, cool. Be happier with the newer stuff. You know, you do you. You do you. I don't want to harp on that too much, but like to really punch up the contrast, to really differentiate what's going on and to really sell the scale and to push yourself, to push yourself. And I think the 40K guys will probably do that, you know, as long as they stop worrying about what units what and what mechs what, and just go just nuts, go. Paint it, just paint just whatever go. You want. Use the paint you have and do something cool with it.
Someone should be like, what unit is this? They just be like, oh, mercenaries, yeah. Pirates. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because you go through the original 3025 and to a lesser degree, the 3026 book, and they talk about, you know, notable pilots, and they paint their mechs however they want. And that's not really, that's kind of lost in some of the new stuff. You know, these sort of individuals in hero mechs doing whatever they want to for their paint jobs.
Yeah, we should paint up those Whitworths.
Yeah. Ugh. So we're pouring ourselves coffee. We're not just peeing in the bathroom. yeah, Dan and I played the famous Whitworth v. Whitworth notable pilots from 3025, which was removed in 3039.
Yeah, that's a bummer because that was like when we did the retrospective, that was probably my favorite bit of fluff in that book.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember...
One's okay with genocide. One isn't.
Yeah.
We're rivals now.
So yeah, it would have been cool to have seen that to stay. But yeah, unfortunately, yeah, Whitworths are definitely not stars of the show. They really support Max, and it was one of those things like, God damn it.
It was like two people trying to beat each other to death with Nerf swords.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, like, you'd start getting a little bit wounded, I guess, because the actual plastic rods start seeping through.
But yeah, one of the other things I was thinking about, too, one of the things that Battletech's missing that I would like to see, and I brought this up on the fan funding board on the Battletech website, the Battletech web forum, and Spec, the guy who does a lot of the communication between the Battletech fans and Iron Wind, he said that he would love it, but he doesn't know if it would be financially viable for Iron Wind to do, even with fan funding, but I'd still like to see it. Would be a bust of a famous character, particularly Natasha Kerensky, and particularly from the MechWarrior Dark Age card of hers, because I think that's the best art we've got of her, mm-hmm. which is what I used in the Wombo one with her and the Bounty Hunter.
You could already get Alric. He's available. Just pick up a random box.
Yeah, yeah. you guys have a bust of Alaric everywhere in your house. You don't even know it. All it is, all it is a white piece of paper.
Yeah, there you go.
A oh piece of cardboard, a piece of wood. There's Alaric. But yeah, I mean, because a lot of these painters, these really skilled painters, they are doing busts of characters. They're not even just like, they're just random busts. If someone sculpted it and they did a good job with it, I think it'd be really great to see as a way to attract higher quality painters to Battletech would be to do these busts.
Be cool to see like a Hero Forge kind of set up for it.
Well, one of the things, I don't know how to do it. You know, would it be a 3D print? Because you got to be careful. I mean, it's one of those things too, is you see a lot of these 3D printed miniatures and they don't look good. And it really, one of the big problems is because of the way the 3D printers work, and you see these lines, these resolution lines, mm-hmm. And it really sticks out, the texture quality. And I mean, you people may make complaints about what metal miniatures do in terms of the molds and the textures you get the metal miniatures, but I seeing those 3D line, those lines of every layer that was printed, it, to me, it's like, oh no, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that. But if you can get a good quality printer, maybe it's something we can talk about, because I know if anybody's interested in seeing what we can do to put forth that, or we can find someone to sculpt it, and what the licensing would be, I think it'd be really cool to have, you know, maybe an STL file and give it to Catalyst to put it up on their website. And maybe they'd let you download it for free, or maybe it's something that Catalyst is okay with, or maybe we can talk to Catalyst and how to get it done. I know there's that Gallery 3025 thing that Renegade was doing, so maybe we can talk to him about it. But it'd be really great to see specifically that version of Tasha Kerensky sculpted into a bust that can be 3D printed, or even it can be made in metal, or it can be made in plastic, for people to paint. I just think it'd be really cool to have that as an option.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty good, which...
Because Battletech is about characters, right?
Which
has been lost in this new art style that they've been going with. And I don't know who's in charge of making those decisions, but it's really, really fucking boring.
Yeah, that Legends aesthetic is really bad.
The Legends aesthetic is awful, and then the new books, it's just... Flipping through it, it's just... There's no characters.
They needed to go back to that Operation Klondike look.
That was probably the highest. Yeah.
That was probably the best.
Operation Klondike, and then
Wars of Reaving.
Wars of Reaving, and the Masters and Minions Star Corps dossier.
No. Back on miniatures, though, before it leaves my brain, if anyone from Catalyst just so happens to get this far and hears this, without going, oh man, these people need to shut up, these damn grogs. Hear me out. I really think it would be neat if you did do a second Kickstarter to get, like we were talking about earlier, miniatures to be able to pose.
Yeah.
You guys have CAD. You guys have probably like STLs or whatever of these. Even if it was like you're shipping them in different pieces, you know, like Blaine did with the Black Knight, or if you come up with like some Hero Forge setup where you could put mechs into specific poses, I really think, I don't know if it would be possible, but I really think something like that would be well worth it.
Yeah. Or ship the sprues.
Yes. Yeah. I would really, really prefer to have that.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because people complain about the old mechs, but they're not reposing these new plastics. They're not going out of their way to do something new with them, either.
No.
Which is just so ironic that the new miniatures somehow feel so stilted, you know? I think it's all right. Granted, yeah, I mean, that's my opinion. And look, if you're out there and you're new, again, I don't want to rain on your parade. If the new stuff's what gets you going, great. But I think it's ironic that so many of these new miniatures and new depictions of the mechs look as though they could not move besides walking or walking at a slightly faster speed. You know, they don't look as though they could duck behind cover.
They do not look nimble anymore. What really got me thinking about that, though, was reposing or cutting up these hips off of the Viper and the Nova, you know, that kind of sparked it in me. I'm like, why should I have to do this when they have the means to just give us the sprues?
Yeah.
You know, so we could decide to do this, you know?
Yeah. It'd probably be cheaper too, because it means that they don't need to pay someone to put them together in China.
It's hard, like the way they have them glued together, it's hard to pull them apart. Like you have to cut them.
Yeah, I wonder what glue they use. I wonder if they use like one of those plastic melting glues that like melds the pieces together. Yeah, remember the old plastic kits you used to get? You know, and it came with that tester.
Yeah, like that rubber cement stuff.
That
yeah.
would melt the plastic into one piece. I don't know if that's what they're doing.
It almost seems like it.
But yeah, it's one of those things. It'd be nice to just get the actual sprues then.
You could buy a Viper and you get the sprue with the different variants in it.
Yeah.
You know, just get it all as one kit. I mean, what would you charge for it? Probably like $10 a miniature. You know, it's plastic one, so like whatever. But you're already paying for that when you buy like pewter minis, you know?
Right. Well, it does make you wonder, you know, with the Black Knight, it was sort of along the lines of, why isn't Iron Wind just doing this? Because it was so, one, it was so expensive. And two, their production run was so small.
Well, they were reinventing the wheel, because they did that with like the that catapult resculpt that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the what's sitting in front of us right now, the Highlander.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't doing anything new.
Well, I know for Blaine and Brent Evans, it was the idea that they were going to bring plastics production back to the US, you know, outside of Reaper. But, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people were able to clean up their miniatures, but there seemed to be a lot of mold defects on it. I mean, for $25, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I feel like they would have gotten better mileage if they formed some kind of partnership.
Yeah. Well, and again, the other problem too is that, you know, if they're using injection molding, I'd be interested to see what they're actually doing. Because I know the resin chews up the silicone molds that Ironwind uses. So, like, that's pretty much out. I mean, the molds break down over time no matter what, but they really get torn apart with the when they use the resin. So I want to say they're using some sort of injection molding that's expensive. Plastic injection molding is really expensive. And it's like...
Well, that's why those miniatures were so expensive when they were selling them.
I mean, the thing is, even if selling 300 of them, they did not... They are nowhere near, recouping the costs. Injection molding for a good quality mold that's complex is thousands of dollars.
Kind of a dumb question, but the Warhammer plastics, are they produced in the United States or are they made in China?
I think a lot of the stuff's in the UK. I think they're really proud.
Oh, in the UK?
I think they're really proud about the fact that so much is made in the UK.
Okay.
But they sell to scale that it's probably really cheap. I mean, granted, okay, the Warhammer stuff's expensive no matter what, and I don't know how much of that's because it's being made in the UK or how much of that's because it's Warhammer and they want to bleed us dry. And not that I play Warhammer, but they want to bleed the player base dry.
Yeah, but it's important to at least bring up the methods, behind the machine,
Yeah. Well, yeah, and complex plastic mold is $25,000, $35,000, $50,000. I don't think the Black Knight costs them $50,000 to make the mold up, but to be $25,000-$30,000 easy, and they only did 300 miniatures in the initial production run.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah, but it brings you back. Like, if you give somebody the sprue for the Nova, I mean, you could see that people in the community who bought these miniatures like the fact that they can pose them. I understand, like, when you sell them in the box set, it's cool to just have them in their poses or, like, have, like, the one-off, like, packs like that. But, this is coming from fans who were spoiled with Iron Wind, with a lot of these sculpts, like, you could pose.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good idea. I mean, especially because of the resources we have with how a lot of these miniatures can be designed now.
Well, it probably would have been easier too. You could get one of those flat pack envelopes with a cushion, the bubbles in them,
yeah.
and just pop them out one by one.
So I'm so upset that people have forgotten about the remastered 3050 Omnimex that you could repose.
Yes, it's
a real shame.
Well, cause there was a thread on Reddit about the Atlas. A guy put the Plastec Atlas from the 94. Or no, earlier than that. I mean, I think in the 80s.
Like, yeah.
And then comparing it to the new Atlas and like, oh man, the miniatures are really holding Battletech back. It's like, do you have selective memory? That Plastec, the Fatless, that thing was only available for like a year. Yeah. And it hasn't been made in 30 years. Like, what are you talking about?
Like they post, I'll see somebody post the old school Mad Dog, the first run they ever did.
Yeah, from like, what, 1990?
Yeah.
91 or
and
something?
Then next to it is the newest one we have. And it's almost like subconsciously we're all scared that the actual CAD design 3050 remaster was so much better than the new one we have right now. Because the new one doesn't even look as sleek.
No. The new one is very blocky. It feels, well, because I know Scroggins was a big fan of MechWarrior 4. And so I know, like, that's, and again, that's his nostalgia.
Exactly.
That's his nostalgia. And, I'm not a big fan of that one because it's not as sleek and it loses some of the bird-like appearance that it had. But it feels really unfair and disingenuous to...
It goes from looking like a vulture to a toucan.
Yeah. It's very disingenuous to put those two miniatures side by side, which are so far removed from each other. Whereas the Chris Lewis late 90s, early 2000s CAD model, when Iron Wind redid all those miniatures, it feels very disingenuous to leave those out in terms of your argument between, well, what do you like more? Because that run of the original Clan Omnimax is really, really fantastic. Really, really fantastic. And some of those miniatures are the best-selling miniatures that Iron Wind's put out for Battletech.
Mm-hmm.
And to have...
It's not to say they don't have their problems, because I'm a fan of the Fire Moth. But the arm pods looked a little too big on it. There are some complaints you can have, but it was the idea that for something they've done, like as a first, I really feel like they hit a home run, but it wasn't like a... completely out of the park,
Yeah.
It was like maybe just right over the rail, just enough to win the game. And I'm not even downplaying it, because they were really good.
Yeah.
You know?
I know that so the first three, for those of you guys who weren't around, and there was a sculptor, his name was Drew Smith, and he posted the Lords of the Battlefield forum, which I don't even know if it's really active anymore, but Lords of the Battlefield Forum had, it was really dedicated to sort of the miniature side of things. He had done by hand the Direwolf, Warhawk, and Timberwolf. And I think everything else after that was all done through the CAD system. And they're just really, really, really solid. They're really, really solid mechs. Really solid miniatures. So yeah, I mean, it's a shame that those are often overlooked and people don't even seem to know they exist because they don't go to the Ironwind Forum. Because they're like, oh, this old battle. I don't want to bother with that. I'm just going to go to Etsy or eBay or whatever and get the 3D printed stuff. But you go to the Ironwind Forum or the Ironwind, the Ironwind web store, and you look up the Timberwolf, you look up the Puma, you look up all those mechs and you see what they look like. And Ironwind even went out of their way and you can get the Hellbringer C torso for your Hellbringer for the big LBX autocannon.
They do that for the Stormcrow too. Stormcrow A, the one with the streak launchers.
Yeah.
You can do that. It's almost like with these, oh man, I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
It's a shame because I don't think there's a full picture of what the Miniaturon looks like. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, granted, unlike Warhammer, which always has a new edition that comes out every few years and a whole new miniature line that comes out with it. Oddly enough, some of the big painters, like, for example, Squidmar, he's got a really great channel as well. He actually went back and he said, he bought a bunch of out of print 1990s orc miniatures because he likes that style so much more than where the orcs have kept gone to. And there's something to be said about the clean lines and simplicity of what they're trying to represent.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're not used to seeing so many things redone over and over and over again, like the Warhammer side of things.
Yeah.
And I think for me, if like it was more along the lines of we got a new Dervish or a new Highlander the way we got this new Highlander from Iron Wind, it would be less shocking because the new Highlander comes in so many pieces you could pose it completely.
How much did it cost?
I think this one was 17.
Yeah,
it's not inexpensive, but then again, no. You pay 20, people pay $25 for the new Black Knight plus shipping.
That's what I was gonna bring up. Yeah. That's where I lost my train of thought. It's like the same people, it's like they find something, like if something's good that doesn't fit like what they want, they find the next excuse to bring up.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh man, these. And it's been around in the community for a while about how pewters gets more and more expensive. You just forked over $30 for a piece of plastic, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where is your actual opinion on this line?
You know? Yeah. And I know there are some painters that really don't like painting metal because of...
And I can understand that.
I can get that. But yeah, I mean, is it the appearance of them? I mean, you know, what's going on? And I think, I mean, granted, it'd probably be less shock for us, again, like I said, if the line was revised more frequently than it has been. But then again, I mean, Balthazar was never about the miniatures the way the Warhammer was.
Mm-hmm.
The way that other lines are. What are you going to do, right? What can you say?
Yeah, that's why I brought up the Kickstarter point. I feel like we're bringing it home here.
Because, well, yeah, I mean, like for example, the Hunchback, the mm-hmm. Centurion. There's a lot of stuff that Scroggins done that I've liked. But there's a lot that... Man, I just, no way. No
yeah,
way.
I feel like if they really wanted to, not necessarily change Battletech into a miniatures game, but sort of encourage it a heck of a lot more, they need to really get into, you know, selling sprues so people can repose or even doing like a Hero Forge kind of setup. I mean, they already have an MUL. I mean, imagine if you could go on the MUL, look up a variant, and then look up, it just redirects you to like a website to get either to sprue and do it yourself or to put it in a pose that you want and maybe they assemble it and send it to you if you're that lazy, you know? Yeah. Something like that would encourage a lot more. Or the thing that drove me nuts too, in these boxes, they gave you the Alpha Strike cards to go with it. Why not just put the cardboard cutouts for the mechs in there too? Because that would also encourage people who bought the packs, if they want to get someone into the game, you know, you'll have a cardboard cutout of that same thing because he might be like, that mech's cool. Be like, hey, here you go. Here's the cutout. Let's try it out.
Yeah,
see if you like it. You know, there's things that they can do that they didn't. that they should have when they did this Kickstarter.
I mean, the miniature side of things, I mean, definitely have changed. I mean, from what it was in the late 90s, or actually the 90s and the 2000s, when they're just, I mean, at least here, there aren't the game stores to go and play.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't people who have invested in the terrain tables.
Yeah, it's turning to old people with RC cars now.
Yeah, it's not the same. I mean, I know I've mentioned this before, but you know, there have been two or three big hobby stores in our area. One of them is really more about model trains. And then the other one has, they've kind of shifted back and forth between what works and what doesn't. But the big one that was really big into sort of the wargaming thing, and you could just imagine, you know, 20 years before that, it would have been, you know, the historical miniatures. You know, Ralph Parfitt has their whole historical line. And then before that, I mean, other companies do the same thing in a different scale. And there's a bunch of companies in the UK, apparently, that do all the, like, super historical stuff in, like, different millimeter sizes. But Games Workshop was a big driver behind this. And so when Challenge Games existed, I mean, they had, God, like 20 or 30 tables at its peak. But then they ended up kind of maybe selling more like 15. But you would pop in there on the weekend and all the tables would be taken up. And that's something that Battlefield doesn't have. They haven't pushed it with sort of the standardization. You're your 5,000 point army, your 3,000 point army, your 8,000 point army. You just go there and you'd set up on the table and you'd find someone to play with and just be like a random thing. So for Battletech to do the miniature side of things, it doesn't quite have that because there's not the places to play the game like that, unfortunately. It'd be nice if there was, you know, and then maybe it's due for a comeback. But yeah, I mean, Battletech and miniatures, if it wants to push towards the miniatures line, it would be nice to see if there was places to play a game like that on terrain like there used to be. There's just not.
Yeah, nowadays, you know, you have to think about transporting this stuff too.
Yeah, well, because I mean, even the one place that's got rooms dedicated to playing games in our area doesn't have terrain tables.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think we kind of meandered. I mean, to reiterate and hit home, I mean, and maybe that's something we'll do in a whole other video, is just putting forward this idea of, like, can we get a bust of Natasha Kerensky to paint? Because I think that'd be amazing. I think it emphasizes again the characters that Battletech has that makes it so strong. It's something that'd be a draw for more serious painters.
Yeah. A bust of Natasha Kerensky, maybe even Aiden Pride, you know, Alexander Kerensky would be a good one. Yeah. Some people would probably do Amaris as a joke.
Yeah. But, you know, I think women are always great for painting because I mean, it attracts a lot of people. I think the other thing too is that illustration of Natasha Kerensky, I mean, is great. She looks gorgeous, but she's not sexualized, which I think is a big factor in this. She was also the first named character in Battletech.
Yeah, she was.
You know, I mean, maybe Alexander Kerensky beats her out, but I don't think that canon was solidified yet. So I think Natasha Kerensky was the first named character. So it kind of brings it back to its roots. And I think that would be great. And there's a way to make that happen. If we can find a way to make it happen and find a way to make sure the Catalyst is okay with it, that would be awesome.
Yeah. With the influx of 40K people coming in, you know, I think this is the time to actually push the miniatures line.
Yeah.
Not that they're like crazy, I need to buy everything kind of people. It's just that they have a different standard than we do.
Well, yeah. And there's a lot of different companies out there that do 3D printed miniatures or have the files to download. Like that's what they do when you pay them for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They do Kickstarters, and a lot of it's sort of geared towards Dungeons and Dragons, other fantasy tabletop stuff. And I don't think that's something that necessarily needs to be mimicked, but it's clear that there's people doing this and that are successful. And I think having it with a relatively low overhead would be the key. Because again, you know, the guys at Iron Wind, it sounds like they would love to do this. You know, having talked to them about it, they would love to do something like that. You know, and I don't know how they would figure out how many pieces. Like maybe it would be the chest and the head separately. But you know, for them, the big thing is sculpting is one thing. They probably have to find a sculptor that's willing to do something like that, because they probably don't have a sculptor on hand to do a bust like that, or who's skilled in making busts. And then how do they make it? How does it fit in the mold? And then how well does something like that sell? Because it'd probably be a pretty big hunk of metal. But again, some of those busts, when they sell them, I mean, they go for like $40 to $60 easy, and that's just in plastic.
People get them.
So I mean, you know, spending that on pewter, not a big deal. But again, will it sell enough for anyone to do it? So just having an STL file that you can pay a couple bucks for off of the Catalyst website would be yeah, cool.
Yeah, we're all passionate fans.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. I think that kind of wraps it up. I mean, I don't know if that really covers everything we wanted to say, but it definitely hits most of the beats. It kind of sums up some of the ideas we've had about
it. Yeah, it's almost like a welcome letter to 40K fans too. You know, which it's a good discussion to have.
Yeah, and it's good to see people coming in to the game. You know, again, it kind of hammers home the point, like, don't stress out about what mech belongs to what faction, and mm-hmm. and don't stress about how to paint it, and do they all have to look like they're from the same unit? Because I don't think most people don't take that too seriously.
BattleTech is a setting, and we've said this in earlier podcasts, that is not only like in the community, but even in storytelling and everything itself, it's a very like welcoming for, you know, men, women, whatever, you know. It welcomes a pretty broad like group of people.
I mean, it does. I mean, that's not to say, unfortunately, there are people that, you know, seem to not, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I've definitely seen some people with their opinions maybe flying out a little bit too out and loud, that are definitely like, I don't want you at my game table.
Yeah. And they get shot down real quick. You know, we're all passionate and in for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make friends and develop a community for BattleTech. We don't want the game to die.
Right, right, right.
We really don't, as much as Ilclan wanted it to.
Yeah, that's gonna be a long episode. Well, because the first it was like, okay, we got to reread Hour of the Wolf and make my notes about everything that really annoyed me.
I mean, I'm going between a new job. It's like, do I really want to spend my time reading that book again? I'm going to be miserable again.
I mean, maybe we should aim for January 1st, like a year to the date.
Yeah, like our before we start our new season, because it seems like we're doing a season a year.
It's just, yeah.
And not, I mean, by, not per episode count.
Hour of the Wolf is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a lot, because, you know, obviously, if we're going to say this, I mean, and one of the things I'm anxious about is, you know, I wrote a story. I submitted it to Shrapnel. I would like to see it get published. It may not get published because it's not exactly what they're looking for, but maybe it will get published because it's something different. I tried to match the submission guidelines that they wanted. You know, it's not a character. It's not a fiction suit of me. It's not a made up unit. It's something that I hope scratches an itch for BattleTech. That's not kind of the same thing. Like the clans, right? Every clan story is character fights a trial so he can fight another trial so he can do the thing to gain recognition so that he can then fight another trial for another trial to win the next trial. And it's like, oh man, I can't read clan stories anymore. And I don't want to hammer Hour of the Wolf so much and then they're like, oh, it's started written by this guy. Well, fuck him. I don't want him publishing. But at this point, I submitted this story back in like May, and it was number 51 in the queue. And now it's been like almost 90 days, and I've moved 5 places.
Oof.
And it's like, this is never going to get published. They're never going to get to it. Why did I spend all this time stressing out about typos and grammar?
If they don't.
Yeah, if they don't. If they don't. And that's all. Like, and I really mean it, guys. Like, there's a lot of typos.
When are we going to get our Hellbinger?
Yeah, there's a lot of typos in the new books, and like continuity errors. Like in Hour of the Wolf and a couple other things that have come out recently, like, there's a lot of continuity errors like between pages. Yeah. You know what mech is what and what the weapons loadout is, and it just, oh man, like in the Ilclan, like I told you about you saw it, like the map. Like, clearly, like, one of the few scenes that had, like, people in it, like, actual people, And clearly the map was supposed to represent the clans planning for Operation Revival.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what map is this? It's like the map, it's like the 3025 map. And I get that where someone would say that's nitpicking. But we've been looking at these fucking maps for 35 years. We know these maps. And the other thing is that it's not even nitpicking because they'd have new information from the Wolf's Dragoons for the last supply run. And they would have had information from their watch, the clan intelligence agencies that were operating in the Inner Sphere, albeit badly, but they would have had something different than that map looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Outbound Light. They would have had something probably as up-to-date as 3040. And you look at that and you're like, what is that map? That doesn't represent anything. That's supposed to, what's supposed to represent, right? Because this is obviously, they've lined out what they're supposed to be the operational corridors for the original four invading clans. What is this map? So you got typos, you've got continuity errors, the Axeman thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really injured me. That hurt me on a deep level. And not just because, one, it's been established in multiple places that Adam Steiner drove an Axeman 2N. Like, that's what he piloted. That was his ride. But the cartoon is not only what got me into Battletech, but, you know, Adam Steiner was a character I strongly identified with. I mean, one, I was in fourth grade. I was like, oh, look, a character whose name is Adam.
Yeah.
My name's Adam. What, he's got brown hair? I got brown hair. Great. But because Adam Steiner, you know, tried to solve problems with intelligence rather than firepower, right? And, you know, that's a big part of my identity. You know, I strongly identify with Adam Steiner and everything about that. So it meant a lot, and it hurt a lot when he was no longer in that 2M with the Legends book, you know? And it's like, why did they do this? Did they not want to pay Anthony Scroggins to do a 2N model? Did they somehow forget that was a 2N? Were they lazy?
Were they upset that the 2N was a bad mech?
Yeah, like what reason was it? And so, I mean, granted, yeah, I mean, that's grogging, that's nostalgia. That actually really hurt. That actually really hurt.
But we got Malthus in Night Court. What do you think the reasoning would be? I think they just forgot. I think the EI implants, like, they forgot about him. Like, he would not have lasted that long.
Well, and you know, this kind of gets the whole thing, too. Is like, is this short story ever going to be published? Like, do I even care? And, you know, one of the things I wanted to do, and this was before the Kickstarter, I think, really was announced, and a lot of things had taken off with Battletech. A lot of you guys may not know, but I don't know if it was like Deep Space Nine and Voyager, but with Star Trek The Next Generation, fans could write scripts and send it in. And if it was good, they would tweak it and they would use it as a basis of a show. And I don't know how many episodes did that, but it was possible. And, you know, people could approach Fossa with a story idea. That's how they got Star-Lord, for better or for worse. That's how that book came about, right? I had a serious idea to do a Somerset Strikers novel. And what has me worried is that Craig Reed had posted on the Battletech board, like, well, it'd be really great to see a trilogy telling the real story behind the Somerset Strikers. Fuck! They're going to do it. Damn it!
Yeah.
But,
and it won't be as good.
Yeah, and I hate to say that, but like, I had some really lofty ideas for what that novel would have looked like. And I got about 45,000 words written. And I think at this point, you know, they wouldn't publish it. There's no way they would. And I don't have the energy to finish it now. And so I'm wondering if, you know, for you guys, I should just do an episode devoted to what my outline would have looked like and what I was hoping to achieve.
Yeah, our plan would be to do a retrospective, which we've been talking about doing for a while, on the cartoon.
Yeah.
And the impact it had on Battletech itself. And even just looking at the cartoon itself, like, I think they give it a little too much flack. Like, the art, they look at the goofiness of the art rather than the, you know, what's behind it.
Well, it was the 1990s. That's what cartoons look like.
Exactly. You know? Which is pretty much my point.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to say, like, G.I. Joe was a good cartoon. It's like,
oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, like the dust up over, like, the He-Man series. Like,
yeah.
Like I loved Transformers growing up as a kid. But as I've gotten to an adult, it turns out, no, I really just loved Beast Wars because that was well written.
Mm-hmm.
But the original Transformers cartoon the G1 stuff, that was just a toy commercial.
And I almost feel like that's why that cartoon has resonated with a lot of people, because the story, despite how it was presented to appeal to kids, was very adult.
Yeah.
But what we would do is we would basically, we would watch like every episode, mm-hmm. and then, you know, talk about it. And then we would get into what your book would do, which would be like, we had the source book, but yours would be, you know, unlike Ill Clan, like a reprint of that book in the form of a novel, or yeah. vice versa.
My idea was to, and granted, I'm not like a master writer, although people have dropped great books for their first book, but obviously it would have taken a lot of revision, a lot of tweaking. But I really wanted to get into the nitty gritty about, you know, the idea of the character arc. I wanted to make characters really three-dimensional, and I wanted to really spell out the conflict between Adam Steiner and Nikolai Malthus. And by the way, like the whole Moby Dick, Captain Ahab thing, that is like lowball stuff. Like, I know they put that in the Legends book. I had that. I actually read Moby Dick cover to cover.
Yeah.
To try and emulate that. And like, I take the time, you know, Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, you know, Moby Dick, to really solidify that anger in Nikolai Malthus as to what was driving him, and to explain the timeline of how things would have worked out in that year. I wanted to make Ciro Ramirez a really three-dimensional character. Not that he was mm-hmm. going to be necessarily heroic or sympathetic, but you would at least understand the decisions he made and why he acted the way he did.
Other than Saturday morning cartoon, he's giving villain vibes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I really wanted to hit home with that stuff. And yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame.
If you're interested in seeing that, let us know, because we will totally do it. Maybe as our next, or, you know, one of them before the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, we've been meaning to watch it since Renegade did the remaster.
Yeah,
they did God's work.
Yeah, yeah, to bring those. Because I remember, you know, downloading really crappy VHS rips mm-hmm. of that. And you see all the scan lines and the noise from the VHS tape.
Yeah, and this wouldn't be a, we're not going to sit there and laugh about the, we may joke about it a little bit, like some of the scenes, but it would be more, you know, about the story itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think people that knocked it for not being as in-depth and or simplifying a lot of things, like, yeah, dude, it was still a 22-minute runtime over 13 episodes in 1994. You know, you're not going to get, you know, Netflix Castlevania quality breakdowns of things. Like, it's just, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that was a long one. That was a good one, though.
Yeah, we haven't done this in a while, so we kind of figured we'd probably get close to an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Well, yeah, hour 22.
Oh, okay. That's what I was aiming for, actually, yeah. So that works out.
Well, cool, guys. Well, again, we hope you listened to the whole damn thing. You didn't roll your eyes and glaze over. if it happens, it happens, you know.
But yeah, or we want to do a Somerset Strikers one. We want to do that. We want to do... You know, maybe it'll be two parts, like Ill Clan, you know, the actual novel Blaine wrote, to Ill Clan, the source book itself. Might just be a one part, depending on how lazy we are.
Well, we were also thinking about doing more of the Red Letter Media style, so you might actually get us on video for that one.
Oh, yeah, we were thinking of parodies to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what else we might do? We might do another video just really quick of the Natasha Kerensky bus, so we can maybe get some traction on that, because I'd really like to see that.
Yeah.
Again, I get it. A lot of you are really keen on the new miniatures. Okay, cool. You do you. I mean, I've got my standpoint. Dan has his standpoint. There's a lot of stuff in, you know, a lot of opinions. I would love to do a breakdown of actually going through the old Ralph Parfitt catalogs.
Yeah, that'd be fun. A little different.
So you guys can see kind of what was going on at the time and what they looked like. Some of those original miniatures. Because I know people have said, oh, well, the scale was off. But actually, that original line from like that first 5, 6, 7 years, the scale was actually pretty good. They were all, you know, pretty close to each other. But yeah, that's enough. That's enough, I think.
Yeah, we've had a lot of pent-up battle talk for a while.
Yeah. Okay, cool, guys. You guys take care. And
See you next time on the Memory Core.